We call the meeting to order and ask you to join me in the pledge of the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members, including our newest member. Welcome.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Present.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chaff?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Kaplinka-Lair?
Present.
15 members present.
Thank you. And again, welcome, Will.
Thank you.
Appreciate having you join us. We have some presentations in terms of proclamations. I don't believe anyone's here for Hotel Worker Appreciation Day in Tompkins County, which was last week. So we won't read that to its extent. I know Kathy Lucerer was at a presentation last week for that. Thank you.
So was Will.
Great. Thank you, Will. Is there someone here to receive the proclamation for Independent Living Week in Tompkins County? If not, we'll get that to appropriate parties. But that is May 18th through the 24th. And I see that Lee Dillon is here for Community Action Month in Tompkins County. And I'll start reading if you want to come up to the mic and accept it.
Thank you.
Whereas community action agencies were created when the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964 was signed into law, and whereas Tompkins Community Action represents this national network in Tompkins County and has a 42-year history of partnering with low and limited income individuals and families to promote self-sufficiency, and whereas approximately 16,000 Tompkins County adults and children live on incomes at or below the federal poverty guidelines, and whereas Tompkins Community Action has made an essential contribution to individuals and families in Tompkins County by providing innovative and cost-effective programs, and whereas low and limited income individuals and families in our county have benefited from the county's partnership with Tompkins Community Action, and whereas Tompkins County, New York State, and the entire United States must continue to wage war on poverty by providing support and opportunities for all citizens, now, therefore, I, Michael Kaplinka-Lair, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2008 as Community Action Month in Tompkins County in recognition of the hard work and dedication of Tompkins Community Action. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you very much, and I'm here to personally invite you.
I hope that you've all gotten an invitation. On May 16th at the Women's Community Building, we'll be celebrating our 42nd year in incorporation, giving away Community Action Award and also a Youth Award for Joe Cassanetti Community Service Award. So we hope to see you. Please RSVP, and thank you for your support.
Thank you. I believe communications and notices are on our desks.
Communications are on the desks.
We have no announcements, and move on to the floor for privilege of the floor for the public. If anyone wants to speak, Stanton Peterstein.
Hi.
Hello.
With our new administration in Town Hall, we've decided to try to make as many contacts we can as with our brothers and sisters who do the same sort of thing in different municipalities. And so I'm here just to report and introduce myself from the town of Ithaca. As I was sitting and looking over the table, I realized I've had a sort of a long career in politics in Tompkins County, and it spans, that association spans two members. My most recent political activity was on the Town of Ithaca board, where I sat and worked for 4 years with Will Burbank, who I think belongs back there, but he's decided, no, he ought to be here. But then I was thinking about the beginning of my activity in politics in Tompkins County. That was about 36 years ago, as I was sitting there trying to subtract, when I clawed my way onto the Democratic committee, county committee, by actually running a primary. I think it was probably the first primary that had been run in a long time to get onto the Democratic committee. And I was introduced into a room of them. It was only me, and it was them. And you remember, Jim, who one of them was? Yes, Jim Dennis was sitting on that. He was a regular at that time, and I was an insurgent. But I've known him and many of you for a long, long time. So I was trying to think about what I should say, what are we doing in the town of Ithaca that might interact with you guys? Well, one thing we're doing is we're now engaged, as Will knows, in formulating a comprehensive plan and trying to figure out where exactly we fit into the landscape of Tompkins County. Probably one thing we don't want is another metropolitan center, but one thing we do want is to be able to provide housing for those people who work in other parts of the county. And we're trying to think through the questions of how do you balance the need for a tax base with the need for affordable housing, and how do we preserve that the beautiful vistas that we all know in the face of the need for more housing in the town, and what are we going to do about bus transportation? What can we do to play our part in the concern about the carbon footprint of the whole United States? And we'll be wrestling with those problems, and I guess everybody's going to be wrestling with those problems, and I think we probably all need to talk to each other about them. Another issue that has concerned me is the problem that we have with surface water in the northeast area of the town of Ithaca. That's the places around the northeast school, and Sapsucker Woods Road, Sapsucker Woods, where people have been complaining for years and years and years about the fact that their lawns were soggy, their trees were dying, and that they felt that they were the victims of runoff from upstream developments that have been going on. We've talked about that problem and tried to deal with it for much longer than either Will or I have been on the board. We're now trying to take a comprehensive look at the problem and see how we can solve, what we can do as a town. And like everything else, the town is only one part of the problem. For instance, on the other side of the town border is the town of Dryden, which is also, we can try to limit the housing that is near the northeast wetlands area, but in Dryden beyond us, there's the opportunity to build more. And particularly with you guys, one solution that's been proposed to the problem is to pipe all the water in the northeast area to get it off the surface of the land and put it into pipes and let it make its way down to Cayuga Lake. But on the way down to Cayuga Lake, it's got to go through someplace or other. And the sewer that is now on Hanshaw Road is not sufficient to handle the runoff that will be created if we decide that the thing that we have to do for our residents in the northeast area is to take their water out of ditches and put it into pipes. So that's our problem, but it's your problem also, and because they're your residents as much as they're our residents. So I would hope that we could work together on a comprehensive plan and work together on various aspects of road building and stormwater runoff in the area that I'm talking about, and probably lots and lots of other problems. Well, I think that's probably enough for a statement about what we're doing. I'm happy to answer any questions that any of you have.
Thank you, Peter. Any quick questions? Thank you very much for your report. Are there members of the public who'd like to speak to legislature under privilege of the floor? Seeing none, are there legislators who would like to speak? Kathy?
Wow.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make an announcement about Science Center. Can you believe it's been 25 years since the community build? Well, Saturday, there's a build 5 to 8 p.m. at the Science Center. It's actually an all-day special thank you for 25 years of community support. The Science Center is hosting a community block party during its birthday build weekend, this weekend, featuring a barbecue by Dinosaur Barbecue, live broadcast and music by WVBR, face painting, and some of the Science Center's best hands-on activities. Everybody should come to this. There are general tickets available for $10, but if you volunteer in the birthday build, you get in free. You can sign up for that, sciencecenter.org, and then you drill down, volunteer, birthday, you'll find it. Hope to see some of y'all there. All birthday build volunteers who work a minimum of one full shift at the Science Center birthday build will receive a free ticket to the community block party plus a $2 discount on additional tickets for family members with a limit of three. This is a great community thing. You know, the Science Center is world recognized. They have a bunch of traveling exhibits that are a big help, and it's filled a terrific niche that was very much needed, and so I hope everybody can find a way to support this event.
Thank you, Kathy. Martha?
Let somebody else go first.
Nathan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm going to... Oh, I just want to remind everybody that this is Asian American Heritage Month. And Asian American Heritage Month was established in 1978. And it takes place in May for two dates in particular. The first Japanese immigrants came to America on May 7th, 1843. And the completion of the Transcontinental Railroad, which was done by many Chinese laborers, took place on May 10th of 1869. And so that's why Congress chose the month of May for those two very historic events. And so for Asian American Heritage Month, I'm just going to tell you the story of my family, because I think that, you know, that's part of Asian American Heritage Month, is just talking about history. And I think, you know, everybody around this room can tell stories about their families, and they'll be, you know, just as interesting, I'm sure, and just as unique. But here's the story of my family. And it's going to focus a little more on my father's side, because their history in the United States is a little longer. And but first, before I get into it, let me also say that Asian American Heritage Month is not about, like, not necessarily about, like, Asian heritage. You know, it's not about going to a Japanese restaurant. It's not about listening to watching a Korean, you know, dance show or something like that. But it's actually, the focus is on Asian Americans. And that's the Asian experience, Asian American experience in the United States. And so my story, that's why I'm going to tell my story, and it's going to be centered on that. So my great-grandfather came to this country about 100 years ago. And he worked in the, I believe, in the Presidio of San Francisco, doing different jobs. I think he was a butler and a cook at different points. And many years later, after he came here, his wife came, and they had nine children, and one of those children was my grandfather. And so my grandfather was a very young man when World War II happened. My grandfather was born in the 30s, and so World War II happened, and of course Japanese American internment took place. Very few people know this, but in Japanese, I mean, it's not very many people know. I mean, a lot of people know that Japanese American internment took place, but very few people know that actually Japanese Americans, all their property was taken from them and never given back, right? And that was, you know, and that was billions of dollars of property, especially in farmlands throughout California. So what happened is that in my family, they were sent to, I forget the name of the place, but basically there was a routing station before they would be sent to the internment camps. And so one of them was a racetrack that was in southern San Francisco. And there, it's a very sad story, but basically what happened is that my great-grandfather, he caught pneumonia, right? And he was very sick. And one of his eldest son was planning on getting into a career in medicine, and knew exactly what his father needed in order to make it. But you know, nobody listened to him, basically, right? And he passed away in a horse stall in that routing center. So that was a very, you know, of course, difficult time for my family. And those nine siblings, brothers and sisters, they took it different ways. Some of the older ones were just amazed that, you know, their family had worked so hard in this country, and were amazed that, you know, that this country would do that to them, you know, put them through internment, and take away their property, and then also let their father die. But my grandfather, he was a younger one, and he and his other younger brother, they actually wanted to. They took a different stance. They said they felt that they wanted to show the United States that they were patriotic, that they were meant to be here in this country. And so they joined the Marines. So my grandfather was in the Marine Corps for a couple years, and then he transferred over to the Air Force, where he had a 20-year-long career in the Air Force as an enlisted man. And there in the Air Force, he was in the Marines in Korea, and then he was in the Air Force throughout Vietnam, and would go every once in a while to Tokyo, right, in Japan, and where he met my grandmother. And so met my grandmother and brought her back to the United States in the 60s. And so anyway, so my dad was born, right? And my dad was he grew up, he was born in 1958, right? And so it was interesting because he grew up in a very different time than I think my grandfather did. And so especially during the Vietnam War, you know, this was something that was kind of on his radar. And he was too young to serve in the Vietnam War, being a high school graduate in 1976. But what happened is that he got into the Air Force Academy. And my grandfather, being an enlisted man in the Air Force, was like, wow, you know, my son's going to be in the Air Force Academy. But my dad, being the anti-war social activist that he was, didn't go, and went to a community college instead, where he met my mother. And so my mother was a fairly recent immigrant from Korea, and she and her two sisters and her brother and her father were here, and they were able to come because my grandfather on my mother's side, brother, came to the United States on business, for business reasons, that he was a trader on Wall Street and things like that. And then once Nixon opened up, you know, the immigration laws for families and stuff, then my mother's side of the family was able to come. Anyway, so parents then met at Hillside Community College, got married in Vegas in 1980, and have been happily married ever since. And but it was interesting because my dad, you know, went to Berkeley. He went he got his bachelor's degree at UC Berkeley, and then his PhD there, and became a professor, had me, and then, you know. And then had my brothers, and it continues from there. But I think that what's the interesting thing about the story, though, is that it's not just, I mean, I think a lot of immigrant stories tend to focus on the hard work alone, right? Like, you know, people worked hard, and they got to where they were. But the thing is that people had been working hard for hundreds of years in the United States and not getting anywhere. And it wasn't until our country opened up its doors, and, you know, opens up its doors in universities, in jobs, you know, had affirmative action programs that could break, you know, glass ceilings, that integrated the armed forces. If it wasn't for all those things, my family wouldn't have been able to get to where they were, and I wouldn't be able to be here right now. And so I think the message is that, you know, a lot of immigrant stories, they're not just hard, it's not just about hard work. I mean, you need to have a country and a social structure that's willing and open to have equal opportunities for people so that when they do work hard, that they could take advantage of opportunities and prosper. And I think that that's definitely the story of my family. We were able to take advantage of all of the great things that the United States has offered to us through hard work, through social activism, through pushing for progressive causes. And that's kind of the story of my family. So with that, Asian American Heritage.
Thank you very much. Martha, then Carol, then Dooley.
That's a little hard to follow, Nathan, but let me give it a shot. The story about personal stories reminded me of the series in the journal. This is from Saturday, May, just this past weekend. The final installment in their poverty series, Finding a Path Out of Poverty. And it's really worth your time to read it. It goes on Inside as well, and there's an editorial following in a subsequent day. And the issue, they focus on two young women, and both had children very young, and that kind of set the path on poverty. They both are doing better now, and they sort of asked Chrissy Gashler was the reporter, although Tim Ashmore did some of the other work on the series, and Topher Sanders. And one of the important questions was, how did you get out of poverty? How do you think you were able to get yourself to school and to a better job and to more stability? And One of them was really focused on, well, it was just luck. You know, I had friends and there were social services, but basically I was lucky. The other one really focuses on, Jessica Brown really focuses on the structure of the society and that people are systematically disadvantaged and poor people really ought to be working together and recognize that it's not an individual problem. There are... there are individual solutions, but even more, this is it's a structural issue about why some people are poor and have trouble making it into working or middle classes. So very interesting series. I hope people take the time to look for it. I don't know if there's a segue here, but one way out of out of poverty might be a real emphasis on a new kind of employment called green jobs. There was a great seminar last night, and some of us were there for at least the beginning of it, and it continues tonight. So anybody watching on live TV, you have till 6 o'clock to get to the Unitarian Church Annex to 208 East Buffalo Street. Sustainable Tompkins is running a program called Green Jobs for the Finger Lakes, employing local people in sustainable economy. And I think the point was made last night that there are really tremendous opportunities to improve the economy and the job prospects for folks in upstate New York if we really look for sustainability and just there's a lot of opportunity for us. Finally, one final thing. Sometimes we make sort of acknowledge people who have passed, and I just want to extend our condolences to Barbara Lifton and her family for the death of Mira Brower a couple of weeks ago. And the funeral is tomorrow at 11 at the Unitarian Church downtown. And so many people were touched by Mira's life, and we're all really devastated by her death. So, thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Carol?
I'm going to talk about food this week. There are the next three Thursdays, people can eat very well. There are three annual luncheons that I want to highlight. The first is this coming Thursday, May 8th. Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services is having its annual luncheon, at which their speaker is going to be John Davis. He's a national expert promoting the use of community land trusts, in particular to provide affordable owner-occupied housing. He's a current consultant to INHS for their land trust that they're trying to set up for affordable housing, and he's been successful at it. His firm has helped over 80 of these to get started. I'm going to pass around the postcard for that. There are extras so people everywhere can take them. There's a nice little graph on this card as well that shows the 80% of median income for our area going up at a certain rate, and then the average house price if for our area given by the Ithaca Board of Realtors going up, and it's a little bit scary to see the slopes of those two charts. That is at the Women's Community Building Thursday, this coming Thursday, May 8th, at noon. It is free. They would appreciate to know, you know, who's coming, but please feel free to show up, in particular for John Davis's talk. The following Thursday, May 15th, where features Nathan Stanley. Our own Nathan is being featured at the Lifelong Annual Lunch. Their annual luncheon is at the Ramada at noon to 2 o'clock, and our own Nathan Shinagawa will be emceeing. Rachel Lampert will be, I don't know, speaking or doing something that she does. And I was going to say that I think it's symbolic of how effectively Nathan has served so many constituents and constituencies in this area that he's been asked to MC this luncheon for senior services. And then the Thursday after that, May 22nd, you can eat with the COFA, the County Office for the Aging Luncheon. John Kraut will be speaking from the IC Gerontology Institute. That is at noon at the Clarion Hotel. And they will be honoring two outstanding citizens. They'll be giving two awards, one for outstanding contribution by a senior citizen to Nancy Berriano for her work with the Tompkins County Working Group on Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Aging, which is a group that she started a number of years ago to ensure that LGBT elders in Tompkins County, in particular, receive quality community services responsive to their particular needs. And Bill Eisenhart from Enfield will be honored as well with the Senior Citizen of the Year Award for his work on behalf of seniors within the Enfield community. This says that it's hard to find Bill ever resting. He serves as president of the Enfield Senior Citizens and extensive work with the Enfield Volunteer Fire Company. So COFA is pleased to be making those awards. And then in the something else that's happening on the West Coast, Nathan brought us out to the West Coast, and I did note that in addition to the policy, I think that action is necessary to keep us policymakers thinking about what policy is necessary. I did notice that the longshoremen up and down the coast, the West Coast, on May Day, staged a work walkout. It was not a strike, but the longshoremen, over 6,000 workers did not show up for work between San Diego and Seattle in protest for the Iraq War, against the Iraq War. They did not want to unload cargo ships in the day of protest. And interesting to note that that didn't make the news the way that some other things do. But I thought it would bring us back to the West Coast and action out there.
Thank you. I have six other legislators who would like to make a mention of something. So I have Dooley next.
Thank you. last Saturday was Kentucky Derby Day, which usually takes my full attention, but our legislature was contacted by Paul Marcellus, a Schuyler County legislator, to let us know about the Green Grand Prix at Watkins Glen this past Saturday, which specifically had a 60-mile road rally for hybrids and alternative fuel vehicles. And he wanted to know if there weren't some county legislator in Tompkins who might like to participate also. And Karen Fuller nicely forwarded that to me, and of course I could not resist that. So I signed up, and Dick Flavel was my navigator, and it was an amazing experience. I've never been in a road rally before, and they give you your instructions and clues at the last minute, so the navigator frantically reads them while the driver is trying to pay attention to the instructions that the driver is being told. The clues are tricky. I got lost twice, which meant I had to drive more miles and make judgment about how much I should speed in order to have my average speed be what it's supposed to be between checkpoints. It was just very confusing, but it was a beautiful day, beautiful countryside, and the displays in Watkins Glen after the race were especially interesting. There was a GM hydrogen fuel cell vehicle, a Chevy, which was on display, not part of the race. There was a 1914 vehicle that was a wood-burning electric car. That was mentioned in the Ithaca Journal article. And there was what looked like a melted jelly bean, which was a solar car. It also was just for show. It wasn't functioning yet, but it was beautiful. I've been waiting for the results. They didn't have them that day. They didn't have them yesterday. I hope to find out tomorrow how I did. But it was a lot of fun, and I think that it's great that there is a Schuyler County legislator who drives a compressed gas Honda. So we had a little rivalry going. And I think that we should be much bigger participants next year. Thanks.
Thank you, Dooley. Leslin.
I'm already. I must be exhausted because I want to cry at everything. Martha said, Nathan's story, Carol, the walkout. I do want to say Nathan is out of the room, but I do want to say thanks publicly. Nathan gets around to Nathan and the others who participated in the GAC-teen fundraiser, Mayor Magicians in a Kitchen, this past weekend. I wasn't there, but I heard Nathan cooked up a mean salad. I heard all the ladies talking about it. It is a fundraiser, and I do want to encourage all of you to think about it, the men in the room, for next year, and I'll make sure your name is on the list for an invitation to come cook. I want to talk about some parallel experience. I had the opportunity to be in New Orleans. Nathan brought it up last meeting I was, his experience, and then on to Kansas. And I didn't have any fun, wink, wink, there. No, I was not on Bourbon Street, Greg. But I went with a number of other volunteers from Ithaca. There were 65 volunteers, not just Ithaca, from New York, I think mostly from upstate New York, who went down for the spring break rebuild effort. A number of six of my colleagues from GAC were there as well. And it's really the most heart-wrenching experience to be there and see the continued work that needs to be done. You keep hearing, you know, the same old cliche, you know, things are not really happening where things need to happen for people to be back in their homes. Having an opportunity to sit and speak with a senior citizen, almost 90 years old, very sharp, with all kinds of illnesses, who after 2 years was able to return to her house and still don't know where other folks are that are close to her. Hearing her story of, you know, I had to leave, and although I didn't want to, but I had to leave, and there's my sister with me who is 2 years her junior. They're both ill, and I have oxygen, and I have this, and I have all these other things, and they're saying, you just got to go. But I need these things to survive. And then asking, will we be together, because we've always been companions to each other, and assured yes. But then they go separate places, and she doesn't know where her sister is, and her sister doesn't know where she is. That it was just the hardest thing to hear. I mentioned to some of my colleagues this afternoon that I had never known that I had muscles in some places. There were 8 work sites that we worked on, and I had the opportunity to paint. I'm not going to hang up my shingle and say that I'm a house painter now, because I don't want the job. Bless the people who do it. But I did a lot with some of my co-workers of painting a house and try to help rebuild some of the houses for people to just move in for right now, people to come back home for right now. But it was amazing that right across from the site that we were working, to see a 500 family, I think it's more than that, I might be lying, but it's more than 500 family housing project being demolished. Brick and steel building that's not destroyed. Water flooded the first level. This was 3 or 4 stories. People were told they can come back in, those who lived in the second, third, fourth floor, that there was no destruction, and get their personal belongings. And when they got, they were told they couldn't. So they couldn't get IDs or anything. Absolutely nothing. And it just was torn down. Just completely demolished. What's going up there, again, you come back to the whole thing of who is now, they're being displaced. And then there's a whole new construction company that's coming in, going to rebuild on this site, and it won't be for the economic level people who live there. It was nice to see the pink housing, whatever it was that Brad Pitt was doing, but the folks who live there can't afford those houses. They are priced at above $200,000. they can't afford those. It was very heart-wrenching. I called it parallel experiences because then I go to Kansas. And although I was in Kansas of my own personal family business, Coffeeville, Kansas also experienced severe flooding last summer. It was underwater, a whole section. And it was like deja vu. I walk in there, and where there used to be houses, it's like it was just pasture. It's green land. I'm thinking, well, where are the houses and the churches that were here? And where are the people? And it was the same thing. The unfortunate thing with Kansas is not only was it floodwaters, but it was also petroleum. And so it smells like petroleum. The houses are gone. You know, in New Orleans, houses are gone, and they're just being demolished. And it was so heart-wrenching to watch and experience, but it was also very fulfilling to be there in adding my little bit, you know, being up on the ladder, painting a house, and making sure that it's ready and hammering back in something that's falling down, or one of my colleagues hanging windows and helping to install a bathroom, whatever it is, so people can come back. So many schools in a neighborhood, it's now down to one school, and children don't know where they're going to school. They have no idea. Some of them are not even in school because there's no place to go. So it's not over. Development is happening in New Orleans, but it's happening in the tourist areas. Areas where people are poor, families are poor, children need housing, need schools. It's not happening, and nobody wants to take the responsibility. So I appreciated the 65 volunteers from New York who went down there and did so much work. It was amazing. So much work over a week's period of time to get houses ready for folks to move back into and take in others who didn't have a place to be, and just to hear those stories. So it was an opportunity, and then to go to Kansas and see the same thing, not as big as Katrina, but for a small town like Coffeyville, huge, and knowing that there's no support. The other thing that I want to mention is just the folks who live, one of the reasons they're trying to get houses, the people are in FEMA trailers, and the FEMA trailers are condemned, but people are still there because they have no place else to live. No place else. And I'm looking at hotels that are empty. They're empty. You know, they were evacuated, you know, with winds, but they weren't torn down in fall town. It'll take a little bit to clean them up and have a place for people to be. So I had the opportunity to talk to the representative of one of the legislators, the city legislators, and mention that to her and hope that there will be some action. Because you have empty hotels that can be cleaned up and people can live there. They can come home. They can live. I met a hairdresser, and she's looking in her bag. She's working on a client, and she's looking. She's going crazy looking for something. So what are you looking for? She said, I'm looking for a curling iron. But she's so used to putting it in her bag because she said when she had to leave, she lost her house and everything. The only thing she grabbed were her two curling irons because she has a trade, she has a skill, she knows how to use those, and she figured wherever she landed, she could probably make a living. And she got so used to putting them in her bag, because that's what she did, that she's sitting with a client and she can't find them. But she had just finished with one and she put them in her bag. And that's the kind of experience that we don't hear about. And it was interesting to be there and really rewarding. And they were so thankful for all the volunteers being there and helping out. And similarly in Kansas, not volunteers, they're doing work, but those trailers are there. People are still living in them, you know, formaldehyde. It was just ridiculous. So I encourage you, if the opportunity exists, to add your 2 cents, whether it's financial or being able to go down there and do some work, please do. Please do. It is so needed for the people who are disenfranchised. It is so needed down there. The Ithaca Youth Bureau and the Local Front is celebrating 60 years. And I'm going to lie to you, but I think it's the 60,000 mile challenge. You can walk. I'm wearing my pedometer. I came back and it was on my desk. So please sign up with a YB and walk. Help them celebrate their 60th birthday by walking, jogging, doing whatever it is you do, 60,000 miles. It might be more than 60,000, but I think that's what it is. So call them up. It might not be too late. Or join the walk party. They usually walk on Mondays at the Waterfront Trail. So you can get together with a group. Don't make any decisions, but you can discuss politics. Just don't decide, because it'll be a meeting. But join them and help celebrate. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Leslie. We have five other legislators. I have Frank, Tyke, Jim, Greg, and Will. Frank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several items for you this evening. The first of which, I'm sorry Nathan's out of the room, but several of us that tried to vote today in the Illinois election, or the
Indiana.
Well, we did try to vote in Illinois.
Well, that's a long tradition there.
Well, Chicago is in Illinois, so they probably still are voting there.
We're still voting there. We had trouble getting Nathan's name in the box. So, but that was a very telling report that he gave. In that same vein, I want to remind you, and I see Mike Lane in the back, that the Dryden parade for Memorial Day is going to be the 26th of May. If any of you would like to attend, I know two people that will be there, right, Mike? The traditional Memorial Day ceremony is going to be at the city cemetery, the Ithaca City Cemetery, at 5:30 on May 30th. And since there was a mention by Carol about going to California, the United Female Veterans of America are having their first meeting of women that served in the military in St. Louis, Missouri, this summer in June. I know some of you are very interested in promoting that. I certainly am. These all come from our Vietnam Veterans Bulletin. And on a more sober note, we were able to get the most recent count on individuals that are still missing in action, or POWs, from the Vietnam War. The numbers are 1,761 that have not been accounted for at this point. That's the sad part of what I need to tell you. I want to also, those of you that may have missed the news item about Lakeside, I was going to do this under the health report, but I thought it might be better to do it now. On Friday, several of us were notified that Lakeside had unofficially, they couldn't make the announcement on Friday, but yesterday it came through. Lakeside will survive. If you missed the article in the paper and on the radio today, the individuals that had been responsible for it all deserve a pat on the back. There were a lot of people that participated, not the least of which is our own Lisa Holmes. But all of the beds that they applied for will be approved, and the two items that were iffy at that time look like they're going to be they're going to survive as well. The shot in the arm that they received financially that you did hear about some time ago was very well thought of and very well received. But this means a lot to the individuals who work there and the residents who live there. And it's a vital resource for our community that we certainly are not going to lose now. So anyone that participated, I know Nathan had a hand in that, as did some of us. And we all are very pleased to see that this has happened. I'm going to spare you my report on WIC until my committee report, but just to hold up, some of you may have been receiving, but some of you may have been inundated with postcards like these, like this one, and I'll give you that report on when I do my health committee report. But if individuals who are here now will not be here for that, let me just quickly say, the letter that was in the Ithaca Journal, the headline of that letter was incorrect. We are not voting tonight on the discontinuance of WIC. And it was there was some misleading information in that letter to the editor. So I just want to clarify that before you take off. Several of us that have sat around this dais for some time are aware that we are always peppered by the public about various tax rates and about what are we going to do about them. And this board is probably the most public on receiving comments and does make an effort to get out into the community to take the heat, if you will, and listen to the constituents' concerns. Just as a reminder, the school board, Ithaca City School Board budget, is up for a vote with a proposition in addition to it. It's at the top of the ballot, May 20th, and there will be individual candidates on that ballot also. This Thursday at 7 o'clock in the high school cafeteria will be an opportunity to meet the candidates who are running for the Ithaca City School District Board. The reason I wanted to mention that, it hasn't got anything directly to do with this board's action or actions, but often we are targeted as the highest taxing authority in the county, and those of you that know this, and I'm sure all of you do, we're not the guilty parties all the time. The school districts have the highest rate of any of the rates in the county. So if you have an opportunity, you might want to sit in. It isn't often that I get a chance to really compliment. You know, sometimes I can be a little sour and sometimes a little dismal about giving reports. But tonight, I think we should concentrate our attention on one of our own. For those of you that were unable to attend the celebration of Women Making History that recently took place, the unofficial title of that was Ithaca's Wild Women of the 70s. And if you happen to not have attended or missed the article in the paper, Dooley Kiefer was honored as one of the wild women of the 70s.
Nice. Now,
let me just give you a couple of highlights. These were not in the paper, but just two things that stuck in my mind. I've known Dooley for quite a few years, although she's quite a bit younger than I am. Dooley had a penchant for... Dooley, do you remember the lamprey issue in Cougar Lake? Dooley had tried to show us how clean the lake was at one point. And I'll let her tell you that story about lampreys and how to prepare them for appropriate eating. The second, and this is one that's very close to my heart, and Jim Dennis will get a kick out of this too. Dooley really won my admiration when she took on NYSEG. And Dooley inevitably pronounces that NYSEG on purpose. So I want to really make sure that if you have a chance, please pat her on the back. I wish I had a chance to laminate this, but I'm going to give you a copy of that article because I thought it was great.
Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome. Last but not least, on another, somewhat sober note, I'd certainly like to welcome Will Burbank as a member of this board and this legislature. I know all of us look forward to working with him. Peter Stein's problems with the town of Ithaca are his problems about losing him. But I think that it's, you know, that's something Peter can deal with, and I'm sure he will. But I think those of us that have had a chance to work with Will on and off over the years, as one of the town of Ithaca reps, I have to give a report periodically to that board on that body. I know some of the rest of you have to do that too. And I've always had a good time. Will always ask good questions, and I'm sure he'll have great answers as a member of this legislature. So welcome, Will.
Ty Randall.
Mike, I want to ask you one question. Are we going to have an executive session this evening?
Yes, we will.
Thank you.
It's okay.
Yes.
For the sake of brevity, I won't share anything about the Randall family because I don't think you're ready for it yet. Sorry. I'd just like to invite everybody to the 15th annual TST BOCES Car Show, Sunday, May 18th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the campus at 555 Warren Road. Donation, $2 per person or $5 per carload. Car show registration, $5 per car on the day of the show, and $5 a day prior to the day of show, $10 a day of show. There's 23 classes. Everyone purchasing a ticket will automatically be entered into a drawing for $500. Don't have to be there. There's a flea market, lots of food, and all proceeds benefit the TST Skills USA club at the center, which is, if you don't know what Skills is, it's there's a regional, state, and a national competition amongst other BOCES that pits the best of the best against each other in competitions. I guess I can brag this year. I've one of my students won the regional competition this year, which was awesome. If you want a ticket, see me afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. A couple of items. The car show, I went last year, some great-looking rides up there for those of you who are car folks. And two things. In this month's NYSEC magazine, there was a wonderful story, a story about Patrick Masters, who is a Tompkins County Corrections Supervisor. He spent a year and many months in Iraq as part of... it is the Alpha Troop, 2nd Squadron, Cavalry, and he's been there for... He started out after 9/11 working, volunteering to do some things near Rochester, New York City bridges, and then eventually ended up in Iraq for 11 months, and he's one of our employees. It was a really fine story about him in the magazine. The second item I have, my wife is a teacher in Northeast Elementary School, and this has to do with... cat control. They had a person come into the class named Pam Stonebreaker, and she talked to the children in the class about cats and neutering and spaying and all that. And she started out with, everyone got pictures of cats and how one cat in 6 months ends up as 53 cats in a very short period of time. And it was a... and. My wife said that it was an especially interesting thing for the children, and she thought the person who appeared and worked on this did a really very good job, and it interests me because we help fund that in the county. And it seems to be the emphasis now with the new director of the SPC is more in the education area and dealing with these kinds of issues. And my final comment is I love the comments that Nate made about his family, and it's a real privilege to be here with him and obviously be here at all, but with all of you, but it is especially fun to be here with Nate and share all the things that we share.
Thanks, Jim. Greg?
A few years ago, some folks decided to begin to work on a logo for the town of Enfield. The town didn't have much of a logo. It was quite dated. And a lot of volunteers and folks that cared about that kind of thing designed a logo, and it reflected the character of the community. It highlighted, among other things, the agricultural roots of the town, and another highlight of it would be the old mill at the upper park, a couple things that are proudly represented in the town of Enfield. Over time, that logo went from a sticker on the side of a dump truck to a sign, and actually a couple signs, and through some grant funding and a lot of hard work of many folks, two signs were made. And they were wooden signs. They were hand-carved. Or I should say they are hand-carved. They're very large. They're not the size of a typical road sign. They're round, but they're more like the top of a picnic table or something, 5 or 6 feet or so. They're pretty good size. Of course, they're beautiful. One's in Jim Dennis's district in the yard of the Enfield School. The other's on the south end of the community, also on Enfield Main Road near the Trumbull's Corners Road intersection. Recently, the sign near the Trumbull's Corners Road intersection was actually cut down and stolen. The signs, of course, are very valuable, not just in dollars and cents, but in sentimental value for those who are proud to live where they do or those who worked on creating and locating the signs. Of course, there's being grant money in there. There's taxpayers' dollars in there all over the place. And it's a great, great shame that someone was able to actually cut down this fairly large sign and apparently make off with it. I would be remiss if I didn't say that anybody who knows anything about this should certainly contact the Sheriff's Department or the State Police, and hopefully somewhere along the line someone thinks better of what happened and tells someone so the sign can be recovered and reinstalled. So, thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Will.
Thank you, Mike. I want to thank everybody for the warm welcome I've received and continuing to get. And it's I am deeply both honored and indeed thrilled to be here and to join you and to hear all of the exciting things that everybody is doing. Over the coming weeks and months, you'll be learning more about me. Please be forewarned. I plan to start by doing more listening than speaking just because I have a lot to learn. I will be following Carol's lead. I was aware that she made visits to various departments, and I gather, Carol, you haven't done all of them yet, so maybe we can work together on that. And I very much appreciate the individuals that have reached out to me and welcomed me. Please know that I would be very happy to sit down with any of you and go out for coffee and learn about your experience, because I know each of us brings a different thing to this body. We all are trying to work in the public good, and I really, really want to we'll learn how we can work together. One project that I was deeply involved with in the town and hope to continue relates to making conditions better for pedestrians and cyclists, and we're working on a number of trail projects. As we enter the age of ever heightening gas and global warming and the realities that we seem to be under on the cusp of a huge change in terms of the cost of just getting about, I think it's ever more important that we make things safe for people who want to use alternative means. And toward that end, I want to bring people's attention to an action that will be happening a week from this Friday. It's May 16th, and it's called Bike to Work Day. And it is being organized sort of spontaneously, even as we speak, by a group of avid cyclists. They are looking for well-known people in our community who would like to join them. I have heard rumors that at least two of our legislators have already volunteered to join. I'm hoping to do so as well. They are looking for more. And there will be publicity all around. It's a Bike to Work May 16th. And if for some reason you can't find out the details, please contact me and be happy to tell you what I know. At this point, I understand there's going to be folks biking in from Brooktondale, Ellis Hollow, from West Hill to Cornell, from Danby to downtown. From Hartford over to Ludgate, out on Henshaw Road, rather. Trumansburg to Ithaca, and from downtown to IC and Newfield into town. So a number of different routes, still growing. The concept here is to make ourselves aware that biking is a way that is getting about, not just for recreation, but it truly can be a very practical ways of getting about, especially during the warm months. but that there are a number of issues and safety concerns that we need to be addressing. And by biking together, we become more aware of those. So thanks, and I really look forward to working with you all.
Thank you, Will. Any other brief comments? Kathy Lou Serrera.
First, just to follow up, there's a site. It's iCycle, iCycle.org.
Thank you.
And they've got all kinds of information about this Bike to Work Day on it. The other thing is I want to give a quick shout out to Bionic Dave. Hang in there, Dave. We're thinking about you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we're ready to move on. I don't think we have any other municipal officials. Peter Stein spoke already, so move on to our presentation. Dominic Fongillo is here. I don't know if you have a PowerPoint or if it's mostly verbal.
Everyone ready for a long, monotonous, boring PowerPoint?
Yeah. We have that already.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you because there's no PowerPoint slides. I want this to be fun, interactive. Feel free to stop me and ask questions. I want to thank you so much for inviting me here today to speak. Keep it brief. My name is Dominic Frangillo, and I'm a board member in the town of Caroline. Also serve as deputy supervisor out there. And I had the opportunity to go to the United Nations climate negotiations in Bali, and I'm here to report back to you on my experience as an individual, what it was like there. First of all, what was Bali all about? It was the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCC, is the broad negotiating structure for climate internationally. So the Kyoto Protocol, which I'm sure you all have heard of, was negotiated under that umbrella. And Bali was all about what happens when the Kyoto Protocol expires in 2012. And starting the conversation internationally about what that structure is going to look like. Very briefly, Kyoto Protocol said all industrialized nations would say, hey, we're agreeing to cut our carbon emissions by 5% to 1990 levels. Kind of, you probably heard this before. So what was Bali all about? It was huge. It was, again, negotiating a roadmap for the post-Kyoto world. And there were 10 to 15,000 people there on the ground. It was just insane. It was huge. You had government, you had intergovernmental agencies, heads of state were arriving to give speeches, so security was very tight. It was extremely hot, incidentally. I was there with an organization called Sustain Us. I was selected to the U.S. youth delegation on Bali, representing U.S. youth. And in our voice, when we hit the ground, we networked very quickly with about 200 youth from around the world that were there, from Australia, from Canada, from Indonesia, all around the world. It was amazing. And our purpose as an international youth delegation, as a national U.S. youth delegation, was threefold. Very quickly, we were there to show the world that the United States wants action on climate change. That we were being a contrast to the Bush administration's position that if actually you do polls, the majority of people in the United States want their future protected. Second was we were sending a message back home to our parents, basically, saying, look, the United States is not doing their part to protect us. World leaders are not protecting our future as children. And the third message that we had was to youth back home, that your future's on the line, that your future is not being taken into consideration. There's decisions happening right now that are going to have dramatic consequences. The decisions being made today will affect your life for the next 50 years that you're alive. It was insane. There was media. You just stand out there with a poster, and all of a sudden you've got 20 media cameras lined up right there. Very intimidating. We broke up into teams internationally, worked internationally across culture, across language boundaries, and we did direct action. We did media and communications work, and we networked internationally. We met with delegations. Our delegation met with the official U.S. government delegation. There was a side event that happened where we presented all the things that were going on around youth climate movement in different countries. And something happened at that meeting I wanted to share with you to kind of the human side of what this was actually like. a woman stood up. Her name was Claire, after hearing everybody speak about what's going on, what people are doing in their home countries on climate change. And she said, I come from Kiribati. It's a small island in the Pacific. It's about 2 meters above sea level. And we don't know what's going to happen to our culture. We are so scared. I'm coming here because I don't know what else to do. We're terrified that we're going to lose our culture, that we're going to lose our way of life. And hearing all of you, she said, hearing all of you and what you're doing in your home countries is the first time that I've felt not alone. It's the first time I felt like someone's cared about what's happening. And as you can imagine, the room was silent. We brought to tears. It made it very real why we were there. We also did Fossil of the Day. It was a kind of fun award ceremony where we gave a bag of coal to the country that was doing the most to block negotiations. Very excited. I actually had the privilege of accepting on behalf of the United States on several occasions. I did my best. We may hate carbon, but we love fossils. So what we said, Al Gore came and spoke, and this was near the end of the conference to a packed room. He has so much respect in the rest of the world. It's amazing. And he called out the United States by name. He said, my own country, the United States, is principally responsible for blocking progress here in Bali. He told it like it is. The room was silent. That someone would actually, break diplomatic procedure and call out a country by name. And then the room just burst into applause. It was incredible. We also did a speech. I actually got to coordinate writing of a youth speech to all the heads of state that were present. And our main point was, look, this is our future. We're doing, as young people, we're doing the best that we can. The climate says very clear. We have a 50-50 chance at the way things are going to avoid catastrophic, irreversible climate change. And we held a coin up and we flipped it, clapped it, drive the point home. And we're doing the best that we can. But we can't mobilize the public, and all of this we're doing is not going to be enough without strong action from you, our world leaders. And this is our last chance. This is an opportunity to create a global consciousness, and this is our last chance. It was very powerful. After that speech, the room was in tears. Something I learned was that young people have an incredible ability in international settings to move people, to touch people, to inspire people to act, and in a way that the boring, droning plenary sessions can never do. And the South Africa delegates were crying. It was amazing. So I went there very excited. I mean, we had an incredible mission. I went there to make a difference, to influence the process of the international negotiating process on climate change, and to help save the world. What I left was not what I was expecting. I left hopeful, very hopeful, that a group of young people could come together from around the world without never meeting each other before, across culture, across language, and come together for something positive. We were all there for a common mission, and that was our future. But I also left with the knowledge that climate change is accelerating so fast, that almost no one realizes how fast it's really accelerating. That the international response is so slow. I just want to hold this up. Does anyone know what this number means? Anyone know? 350? Bill McKibben just wrote an article. He said that this is the most important number in human history, 350. And the reason why that is James Hansen, the top climate scientist in the entire world, just released a paper that said this, 350 parts per million carbon dioxide, is the red line for human civilization. That is the absolute upper bound, upper limit of what we can put into the atmosphere, or what level of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, without catastrophic and irreversible feedbacks. Does anyone know where we are now?
We're above it.
We're at 385. So, what's very clear to me is that the international negotiating process is talking about 25% cuts by 2020, 40% cuts by 2050 is so slow compared to the absolute emergency of what's happening here that we can't wait any longer. We cannot rely on the international negotiating process to save us. It's literally up to us. We are the future. We are the leaders that we seek. And this is my future that we're talking about, Nathan's future that we're talking about, because we're going to live with the consequences. We're talking about a huge mobilization. We used to think carbon neutrality was the answer. We need to go carbon negative. Again, we're at 385. We need to get down to 350 very, very quickly. What are the implications for Tompkins County? Obviously, massive emission cuts are needed. We have a lot going for us. So we can use interconnected strategies, working with institutions, with nonprofits, public transportation, local food production, household conservation, and renewables. There's a lot we can do here. We have a huge amount of resources here in Tompkins County. There's so much going on. It's incredible. As Martha was saying, the green jobs is very important. Having a green jobs pipeline is critical to make sure that we're positioned as a leader here in Tompkins County for the revolution that is just about to begin, that's already started. Incidentally, the county is also preparing an element for the comprehensive plan on greenhouse gas emissions, and there's a public meeting on June 5th at 7 p.m. at Tompkins County Library. Everyone's welcome to attend. This element will be talking about the policies and actions that the county can do to address climate change, what they're not doing already, with lower emissions. What I'm excited about, and in addition to all of that, is we, again, are the leaders that we seek on this, which is terrifying but also exciting, very exciting. In Caroline, we have a group of citizens, Energy Independent Caroline, that has gotten together and decided we are going to speak into existence the idea that a rural municipality can become energy independent. That's awesome. Our motto is bringing the power back home. We started in 2004 by purchasing wind power for the town government. Board members put up their salary and then was filled in with community donations. And we bought something like 25% of our government electricity from wind. Eighth in the state to do that. Next year, the response was so powerful that we fundraised in the community enough to buy 100% wind power for 3 years. We became the second municipality in all of New York State to do that. It's incredible. And with all of this energy that was happening in Caroline, people formed, wanted to get involved, wanted to form this group. So we're starting a community conversation right in Caroline about energy independence. What does it mean for us? What can we do? We're having a potluck on Saturday, the 10th, at 5:30 at the Brooktondale Community Center, and it's how Cuba survived peak oil. They have a lot of lessons for us. And what can we do as we're entering and moving on beyond peak oil? It's very important to have conservation first. You know, the renewables, the solar panels, the wind turbines are the icing on the cake. First, you have to lower your emissions. You have to lower your use of electricity and energy drastically. So that's a principle that we're holding to. And we're very excited. You probably all heard about this, that we just had a very successful event on April 19th called Lighten Up Caroline. I believe it's the largest single-day door-to-door distribution of compact fluorescent energy-saving light bulbs anywhere in central New York. We went by foot, we went by bicycle, by carpool, and by horseback. It was awesome. It was very cool. Apparently, we missed Frank Proto's house. Sorry about that. We have about 90 to 95% of the houses we hit. We're still trying to figure out which ones we didn't. It took about 100 volunteers to do in a three-hour period. Very exciting.
But, Dominic, you have my bulb tonight, right?
Actually, I do.
I did that the way you asked me to, didn't I?
So I'm showing this as an example of something creative and fun. This is fun. Saving the world is fun. It should be fun, right? We had So Green, So Us, community volunteers sew over 1,000 of these handmade bags. We had to fill in with some store-bought bags, put a little tag on it explaining what the heck this bag is on their door when they come home. Some awesome information in the bag in addition to the light bulb. our brochure, Energy Independent Caroline, talks about what we're trying to do, information on how to save energy. We're trying to be very creative here. We had a brochure of profiles of all of the or a lot of the households in town that are using renewable energy, that are using solar panels or wind turbines already. So you can get to go and get to know your neighbor. This is about a community building exercise. It really is a community conversation. Information on the bulb, in invitations to events, and then a survey that we, because we want to understand better how can we as a group leverage what's already in the community, how can we leverage our strengths, and so we wanted people to fill out a survey, and we're going to offer $900 of energy saving products and services to raffle off as an incentive. We've already gotten 120 surveys back. It's really awesome. So this is an example of what a small rural municipality can do. And imagine if we put our collective effort together, what we can accomplish and how far we can go. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Dominic.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doc.
Mr. Chair?
Sure, Frank.
Just to, while Ed Marks is sitting under the screen, just to alert you, Kathy Wilsey from our own planning department sewed some of those bags. So
that's awesome.
Kudos.
Martha.
Thank you, Dominic. I think this landscape is changing really quickly. I just want to mention that at the IDA meeting on Friday, we started a conversation about how can the IDA use its tools, probably in connection with NYSERDA, to help businesses either retrofit their operations or when they're building expansions to be to use energy-efficient alternative energy systems, and there's a lot of interest in that. And I have to say, I think a year ago there was kind of a ho-hum response, and nobody's ho-hum about it anymore.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Dominic.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dominic.
Move on to Chair's report. Just very briefly, I want to thank Leslin for chairing the last meeting and thank Martha for covering when both Leslin and I were absent from the community for a few days. And just to piggyback on Frank's message about the Ithaca City School District Board of Education elections, there's a second candidate's night on the 15th of May at 6:30 to 8:30 at GIAC. There's no Chair's appointments. Report from County Administration.
There's no report.
No report. County Attorney.
I think everybody got a note, but just in case you didn't, we went through the closing on Brown Road, so that's now the count. That's it.
And Finance Director David Squires.
I want to report that I was in Syracuse the last few days of last week, and the dust has settled off the state budget, and I have to follow up on the gloom about that we're above 350 parts per whatever. But the state budget, the insidious technique they used in adopting the budget. We talked about the 2% cut, how that doesn't sound like much, but I think you have to understand that what the state did to the county, and this was just a temporary measure. They're going to take 90. They're going to take 2% off every claim we submit to the state, effective April 1st. The state budget, the state's on a cash basis, so in effect, their cut means that our first quarter claims for programs, which we operate on behalf of New York State, program like early intervention, it's a mandated program, state funding. It's supposedly 50% reimbursement. We submit a claim for our 50%. They're going to pay us 98% of 50%, which results in the state shifting to the county, cost shifting to the county, cost shifting to the property tax levy. What was once 50-50 is now 51% county, 49% New York State. Every program except for the Education Handicapped Children Program, which is a large program, it is not effective because it was under the education authorization. The more frightening thing is that the magnitude of the state deficit, right now, conservatively estimated at $27 billion, the largest in the history of the state, is unprecedented. And the state will probably come back and cut us again before the end of the year. After the election, they'll probably come back and reduce the authorizations further. They can't do anything further to us other than just stop writing checks to us. They have the authority to do that if they don't have the cash to make payments. They can't come back and cut us based upon their shortfall unless the legislature meets again. But go back in context. The last time the state faced a massive deficit, the solution was manipulation of the state's pension system, in which ultimately everyone had to pay back because it was a constitutionally illegal action. And the magnitude of the deficit they're facing now is much larger when they pulled that stunt back in 1989. So when we had our budget retreat, and actually there was a little optimism in the room, but I can say there should be no optimism whatsoever that this is going to be the most difficult budget that we'll be facing, because by the time we get to the budget, we'll be beginning to feel the reductions the state is passing, shifting onto us.
I don't see David getting his dander up usually, but this is the most I've seen him get his. So you go, David.
So, so whatever target you set tonight, it's going to be extraordinarily difficult to meet that target without substantial reductions in services that are delivered to the county. Because New York State is telling us that we have to pick up a larger share, and we don't have an option of reducing the service.
How much does the state account for in the shortfall, and then how much is left in the shortfall? You're saying that this is being pushed down by the state, but that, to my knowledge, only accounts for about 40-50% of the shortfall.
Well, it's very small right now.
Well, the state, from my understanding, is the shortfall is about $1.5 million, but the total shortfall is $4 million.
No, the total, the way, it's very difficult because the state is on a cash basis. They adopted a budget effective April 1st. They are estimating that they have a hole in their budget when it comes around next year that's in excess of, in a three-year period, it's in excess of $27 billion.
Okay. That's with a B.
B, $27 billion. And part of the problem is, economically, 22% of the economic base of the state, the income tax base, comes from Wall Street. And when Wall Street recovers, when Wall Street has a problem, it hits the state, their liquidity very quickly. They had a lot of companies that paid bonuses last year that to the highest earners in the business, but they're reducing payrolls. They're reducing payroll on Wall Street, and every time the average salary on Wall Street is $300,000. And I think the figure is something like 22,000 jobs are being cut.
Did you say $27 billion for a three-year period?
Yeah.
Okay. And this, so you're saying that the cuts are going to come as of April 1st, so that's as of a month ago, and that will affect our current, the budget that we passed last November that was balanced. We're not going to have the money.
Correct. Right now, for example, the health department's claims go in at 40% of expenditures. We know that they're going to pay us 98% of the claim. So we're only going to recognize 98%. So every quarter, every quarter will be off a little bit. There's $22 million in state aid that we have in the budget, in the general fund. That was how much we brought in, recognized in 2007. Not all that money is tied into this cutback, but a substantial amount is. But the 2% cut is the way they did it is the thing that you have to be concerned about. A cut versus a cost shift. And the state's spinning the number that they cut us based upon their calculations on their budget, not on the county's calendar year. So, you know, they talk, oh, it's only $40 million, when NYSAC says it's not that, that's not true.
So do you see that we may have some sort of a mid-year have to do something, or is it the sort of thing we can reconcile at the end of the year for 2009?
Well, the difficulty is because we're always, it takes a quarter, and like right now, departments are putting in their first quarter state aid claims. So the impact is not going to be that apparent for a while. It's just almost like sales tax, that we don't get the sales tax information until it's too late to make an adjustment still. That's why everyone at the county finance school was sent back with the message, get ready, start working on this now, because it's not going away, and the holes are going to get deeper and deeper.
We'll be able to do it.
David, could you do an estimate for us of how this will affect our adopted budget?
No, we haven't yet.
Can you?
Sure.
Will you?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
We'll be able to ask David more questions as we get to our financial goals for 2009. Any resolutions to be added or withdrawn to the agenda or from the agenda? Seeing none, let's move to the consent agenda. I'll read the appointments and the titles of the resolutions, and if you want to pull them off, let me know. For appointments, we have Larry Roberts to the Public Information Advisory Board. Under Public Safety Committee, we have Resolution A, Award of Contract. Okay. Resolution B, Authorization to Accept an Award of a Grant for the Benefit of the Drug Courts of Tompkins County. Resolution C, Funding of Community Celebration Grants. Resolution, this is under Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Resolution D, Funding of Tourism Marketing and Advertising Grants. Resolution E, Funding of New Tourism Initiative Grant. Resolution F, Funding of Tourism Project Grants. Resolution G, Award of Tourism Capital Grant, Keegan Nature Center. Who'd like to move that? Frank moves it. Martha seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. We're going to move up Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee because we have some people here for that, for those resolutions. Martha, might you start with your report?
All right. Thank you, Mike. I have no committee report. We haven't met since the last legislature meeting. We will meet on Thursday with another very full agenda. We had a lot of work on the, I'm looking for it now, on the tourism grants, and a couple people asked for all the information, all the backup information on those consent, thank you very much, on the grant programs that are on your consent agenda. Dooley and Kathy got copies in their boxes, and there are three more copies on the top of the mailbox for anybody who wants to see all that background on the 56 grants that PDEQ reviewed at our last meeting. And in your red folders, there's a spreadsheet, thanks to Jack Kipla, of the dates on all these festivals and various things, so that everybody has a copy of that in your red folder.
And just quickly, the coding, CMP. What's that?
It's on the top.
Oh, I see. On the top of the right hand side. Sorry. Thank you very much.
That's the type of grant.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Well, if you're just looking for where you want to go, the type of grant doesn't matter to you.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. So I am on.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for getting the dates of the events. That was of particular interest to me. But I looked at the documents you did provide, and I was surprised that the Ithaca Triathlon Club which has applied for money now, is actually for an event in August of 2009. And I wondered if there wasn't another round of grants and wouldn't it have been more appropriate for them to do one later this year? So that's just a question.
Off the top of my head, I wasn't prepared. I'm going to guess it had to do with marketing and getting.
Yeah, I believe it's marketing.
It's all marketing.
Right, so that's sort of getting prepared. I don't know, but I'm sure Jackie Kibula would have the answer off the top of her head.
I can provide some information. The grants rounds are all designed for, most of them for organizations that plan in advance and are conducting events, many of which bring in people from around the nation for these events. And that's the idea of bringing people here. And so there is a real lead time to plan and carry off an effective event. So
I understand that this was so much further ahead than any of the others that it made me ask, is there another round of grants this year?
That depends on the money that's left. Usually there's, I think there are two rounds. But another in the fall.
The other question I was interested in, and I didn't see it in the materials, was when a capital grant is awarded for feasibility study, how do we find out who is going to do the feasibility study?
I asked Jackie, and she said it's not usual to put it in the resolution because that's not really the relationship. That's up to the agency that's carrying it out.
Yes.
I did get the information, though, and because I looked in the minutes, and it wasn't in the minutes. The capital grant for the Cougar Nature Center feasibility study is going to be Claudia Brenner Design. And the one that's coming up, and the Stewart Park Rehabilitation, is Rick Manning, his firm.
Thank you.
You ready to move to M, N, and O?
Resolution M, amending membership of the Water Resources Council, and I so move.
Is there a second? Pam McAsee? Your discussion. Frank Proto.
I supported this in committee so we could bring it to this board, but I just wanted to alert you that I chair the Water Resources Council, my vote is not pertinent with that in mind. But I intend not to support this simply because I really think, and I made the same argument at the Water Resources Council, that we need to retain this seat and make a more aggressive approach at finding a member. We have tried that. There are several new organizations that have sprung up in town. One of them is Ithaca Forward. We had two individuals very interested from Ithaca Forward in applying for the seat, but they began to balk when they heard that the seat might be dissolved. I don't know how that stands now, but I clearly don't think we need another planning seat on this board, and I don't intend to support this. We do need representation from this segment of the community on the Water Resources Council simply because that segment does need to participate in the discussion with regard to water throughout the county.
Other questions, comments? Carol?
I sit on the Water Resources Council and was there for the discussion about this. I think the sense of the majority there was that there's an awful lot of water resources planning that needs to go on in the next few years, and given that and the fact that there hadn't been takers for the seat as it was constituted, that they need a critical mass of people, encourage people from the community to get involved in this organization. Water is crucial to our survival on the planet, and so I support. But they did work looking into how to reconstitute this, so I would be in favor of following their lead and their request.
Pam McAsee.
I didn't have my hand.
Oh, I thought
Julie did.
All right. Did you have your hand up, Julie?
I did, because I'm on the membership / nominating committee of the WRC, but Carol said what needed to be said.
Okay. Martha.
Just to be clear, that it's not intended that's a county planning staff person. That'd be from another field, not necessarily a municipal planner, but anybody.
Are we ready to vote? Frank?
One more bite at the apple, Mike. Just to complete the circle on what perhaps Carol has said, there was quite a bit of discussion and there was some effort, which I did support, with regard to making this an at-large seat. Unfortunately, that failed. But just so you know, it was something that we tried to model with regard to the EMC, which has a number of at-large seats. Thank you.
I think we're ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution M regarding Water Resources Council, raise your hands and keep them up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Fails 5-10. Move on to Resolution N.
And award of Tourism Capital Grant, Cuban Waterfront Trail Initiative. So moved.
Second by Kathy Lou Serrer. Any discussion?
Question.
Frank Proto?
Yes. Martha, I'm sorry, I didn't bring my notes from the Planning Committee meeting, but maybe you can remind me. But first, a comment. I did not support this in committee simply because I was concerned about what the money would be used for. I think the city qualifies, with regard to Stewart Park, the city, like any other municipality, does need from time to time an opportunity to study and determine what needs to be done. And I think part of the initiative at Stewart Park, those of us that have used it over the years know that there's some parts of it that are really in disrepair and really need some evaluation as to what to do next in order to make it a viable destination, if you will. And it's a beautiful location, there's no doubt about it. The concern that I had, and this is where I need some help, Martha, and explanation. Do you recollect if the $15,000 was going specifically for the consultant? I know that it is not going into the actual repairs because they don't know what to recommend yet. It's not going for capital expenses, but I'm drawing a blank on what it was being used for. If you could recollect that, I'd appreciate it.
Well, one whole category of these capital grants is for feasibility studies. So in the first whereas, it talks about reviewing and analyzing the feasibility and economic impact of tourism projects. That's part of this program. So I assume it's part of that's to pay the consultant. I don't know if Rick Manning as an individual is subcontracting any of it or if there are materials, I don't know, Frank, and frankly, with 56 grants,
that's been done before.
56 applications and projects to approve at a committee that had a great deal of other work to do, I think this is evidence, direct evidence, of supporting something that I've talked about at a couple meetings already, the motion that I hope to bring forward at the next meeting, having to do with streamlining the approval process for the tourism program applications. We have really dedicated volunteers. There's about a four-level process of approval by people who really know how these things work and what's needed far better than we do. And I apologize that I can't answer every detail of all these grants. If Ed wants to add anything, welcome, but that's on his program. I don't see anybody else from...
How about Carol? You were our representative to this. Do you have any recollection of that?
I mean, I didn't read this particular grant proposal. I know that Stewart Park, which is, you know, an incredibly heavily used park, has been on the agenda of the Tourism Board for a long time, hoping that somebody would step forward and look at the feasibility of what can be done to improve Stewart Park, which is in sore need of that. And so I think that the board, Pam, may be able to fill us in as well, was very pleased to see that this is moving forward. And that's not a lot of money to look at feasibility.
But my question was, is it going for salary or is it going for something else? And I honestly don't remember.
I think it was going for a study of what can be done in Stewart Park.
Which is probably mostly salary.
Okay.
I mean, would be my guess.
Could I just add something to that?
Kathy, next.
Okay. Thank you. First, I'm going to out myself. I'm a city resident. I use Stewart Park. I'm ashamed of it. This is occupancy tax money. I believe it's part of our oversight as legislators to have these grants come before us. And I agree with Martha that these are subject matter experts. I think that this use of room occupancy tax money is something really important. I have some friends coming to visit this weekend, and I will hesitate to take them to Stewart Park. I may take them to our state parks. I would like to be able to take them because I can walk there from my house, and it's a really important part of our county, and I think that the room occupancy tax money being used for this $15,000 feasibility study is something that we can commit to, and that's why I seconded this, and we'll support it.
And Pam.
Well, I just wanted to add a little bit to Kathy, what Kathy said. Having served on Common Council for 6 years and watched our inability to adequately take care of Stewart Park, I mean, I think the last big expenditure there was when we put in a capital improvement to put a roof on the old boathouse down there so it wouldn't collapse. And it truly is a county park. I don't believe that the city will have money in the future, near future, to do the renovations that really need to be done there. I think this is a wonderful opportunity and a really not that much money opportunity to begin to focus the attention on the park and to try and come up with some concrete ideas of what we can do and how we can do it. And so I will support this gladly.
I think we're getting close to a vote. Frank Frodo?
Yeah, Mike, I'm sorry to belabor this, but who is... Carol is no longer our... You're not the SDPB rep at this point, are you, Carol?
No.
I'm
the rep.
You're the rep.
Yeah.
Pam, when you go to the next meeting, can you communicate to them that I intend to support this too? I mean, my question was about the salary, not about the need to do the study. But my concern, or my interest would be, and I want to make sure that we get it, is that Martha's Planning Committee get a copy of the report that comes out of this so we can at least see what they're recommending.
Yeah, I'm sure that they... All right, I will pass that message.
Thank you.
On.
One last quick comment, Carol.
No, well, I will say I went off the board before this grant round, but I was on there for 6 years, during which we redesigned and created 12 separate grants programs. That includes celebrations grants and some others that you're more familiar with. But that we ensured by a really complex, lengthy process, creating a strategic plan, a long-range plan with specific goals, which Stewart Park was on, and then ensuring that all applicants had equal access to information and that the guidelines for each of the grants programs were clear. The capital grants program is one that in particular doesn't operate all the time. It operates when there are programs that come that are appropriate. it's not enough money to do millions of dollars of capital improvements, but it is enough money to help get these kinds of activities started and to be a piece. So I am confident that this was part of a sort of a concerted and, a detailed, thought-out process. The programs themselves also went through an evaluation. I'm confident that these programs have had oversight beyond what most of what we do endures.
Thank you.
At various levels. Thank you.
Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution N?
Aye.
That looks like it's unanimous. Thank you very much. On to O.
To Resolution O, to approve continuation and revision to Agricultural District Number 2. So moved.
Is there a second? Frank Proto? Other questions?
Wait.
Are we ready to vote?
Wait, Mark. Is this O?
I know, I'm just kidding.
What? I voted against this at the Planning Advisory Board and at committee, and there are maps in your folder also. At this late hour, I don't feel a strong need to go through this. The reason I voted against it was it seemed some of the Ulysses parcels just south of Jacksonville would have the effect of promoting sprawl. Thanks to Jim's efforts, learned that more of the town board had agreed with the removal of these parcels. I guess I will reluctantly support the resolution as it is. Don't need to belabor it at 20 after 7.
Other comments? Dooley.
I will be voting against it, and I want to just say why. It's precisely because now that I've seen the maps, which I hadn't seen before, and seen the proximity of these parcels to 96, and the all-too-real possibility of sprawl working against the Route 96 corridor study, I don't feel comfortable voting for it. I will vote against it.
Kathy Lucifer.
Just briefly, I'm going to say that I read the resolution, and it looks to me like we went step by step. You know, the New York State agricultural law requires ag districts be renewed every 8 years, and landowners can apply to become part of or exempt all or part of their. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but we had a public hearing. We brought it before various groups. I'm going to support this. I think if landowners have asked to be removed, we should respect them.
Frank Proto.
Yeah, just to add something to what Kathy said, I agree 100% with what Kathy has reported. While we're not required to adhere to what the local municipality recommends, please be aware that in this case, Ulysses has been, and Ulysses has representatives on Planning Advisory Board also. They've been supportive of this happening.
Martha.
I really agree, Julie. I'm very torn. But I would also like to see if Ed would like to add anything, because this was something that he looked at very carefully. Not required, but if you want to say anything, Ed, you did bring up some good points at both of the meetings where it was discussed.
And
we'll be very, very brief. The only concerns I really had here was that in the effect of removing some of these parcels will be to surround land that's still in the ag district by land that's not in the ag district, which can create conflicts between non-agricultural and agricultural land uses, which the ag district law is designed to try to avoid. And in this case, the people who are being taken out of the ag district, if they sell their property, the new owners will not be notified they're in an ag district, even though they have right behind the back line of their property lots land that's protected for all agricultural uses. And I think that's probably the fundamental reason. There's some other ones, but that's enough for now.
Carol Chop.
Yeah, I voted for this to move it out of committee. I really agonized and wasn't sure on the side against this. I do think it may help to promote some sprawl, and I don't think that it conforms entirely to the planning, the master plan, and the process that we've been through in determining where we'd like to see this kind of development. Which is not heavy development, it's just suburban development. On the other hand, for the same reason that I supported the water resources motion, this was the result of an extensive public process. And I do have an overriding concern that we encourage people to engage on these public boards, that they spend a lot more time looking at the particular issue than we can, that there is the Agricultural and Farm Loan Protection Board initiated this. They gave the property owners every ample opportunity to respond. They conducted a public hearing, and then they came with a recommendation. So I'm going to vote for it, but I could be convinced otherwise still if there's strong sentiment here.
Tim Dennis.
Thank you. I was prepared at one point to vote against this resolution because I, as a former member of the Planning Committee, that I was concerned about the sprawl issue. I took the time and to contact some of the board members, and they don't seem to be that concerned about it. And so in that sense, there were some curious things that went on during the whole public process. People got a letter that said, if you don't respond, then it's okay, you're out. So, you know, it was a very curious way it was done. Having said that, I'm going to support the resolution pretty much based on the fact that of the other elected people on the town board out there who have a feel that they have the control through their master plan, their comprehensive plan, and their zoning. So, and for that reason, I'm going to support it.
Duly keeper.
I forgot to say that I'm not opposed to renewing this ag district. My no vote does not indicate that.
Okay, thank you. I think we're ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution O, please raise your hands. Looks like 13. Opposed? 2.
It's catching.
Thank you very much, Martha.
That's all I got.
We're getting close to our two-hour mark where we sometimes take a break. I'm going to proceed, assuming that we could get through some of these agenda items pretty quickly. On to, or back to the beginning of the agenda, which is Public Safety Committee, Greg Stevenson, Chair.
In our last meeting, we spent the greatest amount of our time on a discussion about reentry, community reentry from the county jail. Representatives of probation, the sheriff's department, the jail, DSS, OAR, assigned counsel, and more, had the opportunity to kind of identify what each of the parties is doing currently and ask some questions. There'll be more discussion in the future about reentry. I'm going to ask that parties involved in reentry sit down together, hopefully sometime in June, to discuss what we're all doing and how we can perhaps coordinate and improve the way we operate. We also talked a little bit about the May 19th community justice data. The whole acronym escapes me at the moment, but the technical assistance that Deputy Administrator Younger has arranged, and I look forward to that being a positive learning experience for all of us. Our next meeting will be May 16th, Friday, May 16th. third Friday of May. And that concludes my report.
No questions. Resolution A.
Resolution A, award of contract, physician services, Tompkins County Jail. I so move.
Is there a second? Jim Dennis? Discussion. Dooley Kiefer.
I asked that this come up only because when I saw the limited number of contacts for the information to be sent requesting responses, I was surprised and wanted to understand why the information wasn't sent to, for example, Cayuga Medical Center, if it went to Guthrie, why it wasn't, and particularly why it wasn't sent to the medical associations in our county and all surrounding counties. So that's what I'm asking.
I don't know the answer to that specifically. I've not spoken to the office that sends out the requests for proposal. I did speak to the sheriff about this, and the physician that this resolution would award this to is the current jail physician. The sheriff speaks highly about his abilities to serve them, combined with his physician assistant. They very adequately provide for the needs of the sheriff's department. The one thing I can say, Dooley, is you know, with my fire service experience and the need to find medical providers for legally required work, it's very difficult to find providers for this kind of work. I highly doubt that Cayuga Medical Center would have responded affirmatively had they received something. I could be wrong, but it's very difficult to find providers for this kind of service.
Well, the provider to whom this is being awarded, who is the present provider, is from another county. That's what made me wonder why it wasn't sent to medical associations in all the surrounding counties. So I'm not going to vote against this. I just thought it was worth pondering.
I believe we're facing a unanimous vote, if I'm reading the room correctly, but Kathy Lucifer, Martha, and Nathan.
I'll just briefly say, I think Dooley raises a good point. I'd like to ask if in the future you could, the people involved could just see to it that we follow a procedure that's more likely to be more transparent than this one. And I will support this, but I think it's a really good point. And in terms of diversity, you know, there's an old saying, you keep doing what you've been doing, you keep getting what you've been getting. I think there's a way that we should follow our own best practices in this and so many other cases. So I think it's a good point, but I'm still going to support this for now.
Martha?
David's office and the purchasing office are really the ones who handle it, not the sheriff. So I was talking to David earlier, and he said he'd be willing to talk about this.
I think I would agree that we made a mistake, and we didn't. What happened is that this contract was coming to an end, and we had to put together a package to, and the sheriff was definitely satisfied with the services he was getting. Our file from the previous solicitation, we notified those people. And my staff did not notify Cayuga Medical Center. I know that for a fact. We should have, no question about that. We did get inquiries because special service, in our judgment, the Internet is the better choice to attract vendors. And we did receive inquiries from National Correctional Medical Services. But I think our facility is, since we're centrally isolated, don't have a large population, and it wasn't economically justifiable to submit proposals. But I got an egg on my face because we didn't send a package to the hospital.
And Nathan.
And we will do it next time. We will.
Sorry. So I'm sorry. Is this doctor affiliated with Guthrie?
No.
No.
He's got a separate company that provides a service to Tompkins County, also to Cortland County.
All right.
We're prepared to vote on Resolution A. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? One opposed. That's Leslie. Thank you. And on to Resolution H.
Resolution H, appropriation from contingent fund, replacement pay, Department of Probation and Community Justice. I so move.
Second. Jim Dennis seconds. Any discussion? Billy Kiefer.
It's again, just a question. There's no indication in the resolution how long this person was out beyond the 2 months when we don't pay. Do you happen to know?
I do not.
Jim?
I think David Squires could answer that question.
I think David's in consultation.
He's talking. But
Will this change anyone's vote, this information?
No, it's just a question.
Okay, we can probably catch up with him after the meeting then. Are we ready to vote on H? All in favor? I'm sorry, this is a short roll call vote. Excuse me.
Mr. Randall?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be recorded as no? Thank you very much. That's unanimous. On to our next committee, Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
Committee met. I was not here. I read the minutes. Nothing huge to report, but look for more information soon through the Personnel Committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On to Health and Human Services Committee. Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Health Committee will meet tomorrow at 3 o'clock. I just want to draw your attention to a couple of items that are on the agenda. One certainly is the update on lifelong / COFA and the relocation or the consideration for relocation. Another is the we're going to have a report, as was requested. I think Carol was interested in receiving an update on the autism / children with special care needs that Sylvia Allinger had been preparing. We were not ready for it last month, and we are this month. But the one that's drawing all of our attention is the discussion on the resolution, which will perhaps result in a resolution pertaining to the discontinuance of the sponsorship for the WIC program, the Women's Infant and Children's Program. And just to remind you, we have been receiving, and Carol held up a packet of them before, many of the cards indicating that the general public does not want us to drop sponsorship. Part of the problem we're having is some of them are under the misconception that that it's the county's decision to drop the program. It's the county is considering not applying or turning in an application. The decision on continuing the program depends on who the state picks. And there perhaps will be several applicants to step into that role. But the final decision is the state's. It's not ours. But again, clarifying that the vote will be, or the discussion will be at the Health Committee tomorrow. There's a further discussion at the May Budget and Capital Programs Committee. I don't want to steal Nathan's thunder, but it will be discussed at that meeting, perhaps pending the result of a vote at our meeting tomorrow. If anyone wants to add anything to that, please feel free to do so. Let me just finish one other item, Carol. There was a resolution that I asked to be added to the agenda. We have a busy agenda tomorrow, but authorization to submit a CON application for 55 Brown Road, because Brenda Crosby indicated that we needed to act rather swiftly in order to keep the momentum going for the Facilities Committee's review of that Brown Road facility. So check your mailboxes. There's a resolution in it, if you don't have it already, that'll be added to the agenda tomorrow. A certificate of need. Thank you.
We're not going to spend a lot of discussion about a prospective agenda, but quickly.
Yeah, I just want to make clear, we've had a lot of feedback, some of which correctly understands that the issue that we're about to take up is not whether there will be a WIC program or not, but working through
where that might most effectively sit. And some of the perception out in the public is that we're talking about totally ending a program. And so I just want the public record to indicate that that doesn't seem to be our intention, and as the discussion moves forward, that we should keep that in mind.
Thank you. And Dooley?
Frank, I don't think I'm going to make your committee tomorrow, so let me make a possible suggestion for your consideration. I think it would be great if the county applied to support it again and other entities in the county did the same and see who the state picks.
We move on to Facilities Infrastructure Committee. Leslie
great Beat, suggestion.
Claire Bourne, Chair.
I would like to yield my time to Tyke Randall, who's going to give a report tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Tyke?
Thank you. We met on April 17th. Couple things. I reported that I've asked that we hold a public hearing in McLean. I've had a whole lot of concerns and complaints there, so I thought maybe it would be a good idea if we got all parties interested into a meeting where we all could discuss it and maybe work out some of that stuff. It's a lot of misconceptions with highway things. So Steve came and talked to the committee about the possibility of constructing a storage building at Boswick Road to house the county's voting machines. Said that you'd need about 3,000 to 4,000 square feet for that purpose. They've done a lot of checking into the area for spaces that were available that would meet those needs, and they found that the cost would be anywhere from $25,000 to $40,000 to rent plus utilities and other expenses. So he's thinking that it would probably be more cost effective if we built this building. And he pointed out that the county in a few years ago, Highway had talked about building a storage building up there, so when the needs perhaps change in a few years with the storage issue with the county's voting machines, that perhaps the facilities division would end up occupying that space. We also were given a draft report on the Cornell University Transportation Investment Initiative. Again, it was a draft report. We reviewed that, and it showed various projects to undertake over the course of a 10-year period. And of note, these projects will share costs between Cornell University, local municipalities, and federal and state transportation. We talked a little bit about the 2008 highway work plan. And I guess as most of us could probably expect, that probably won't be able to do as much as normally has been done or what was expected to be done due to, you know, escalating prices of blacktop and all that. Next meeting is May 15th at 3:30. And with that being said, I'd like to move the revised version of resolution number I, making a negative declaration of environmental significance, runway safety area improvements, and obstruction clearance project, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport.
Is there a second? Leslie McBean Claiborne. Is there discussion? Dooley Kiefer.
I had initially hoped we could change this into a condition deck, making it conditional on the strict adherence to the addendum, which is in the new third whereas in boldface. But I checked with Jonathan, and I understand that that would delay action for a 30-day public comment period, and I don't want to delay anything. So I'm going to propose some additional language to the final resolved and hope that it will be agreeable to the mover and seconder. The final resolve says, resolve further, the Tompkins County Legislature does hereby make a negative declaration of environmental significance for said project with the understanding that there will be full compliance with technical specification item P-151 of the construction document as modified by Addendum 1.22, which is what's referred to in the whereas, and Jonathan sees no problem with that language.
Is that friendly to Tyke and Leslin as mover and seconder?
I do want to check with Ed because we had some discussion about changing the resolve, and I want to see if that would affect anything as well. Thank you, Jonathan, for speaking to that.
Ed,
Ed doesn't see a problem with it. It's fine with me.
As long as Jonathan says it doesn't effectively make this a condition negative deck, no, then I'm okay with it.
Okay. And that's okay with you, Tyke?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, that's now motion on the floor. Any further comment? Kathy?
Just for the record, my understanding of the reason that we're doing this is because some of the paperwork wasn't consistent and that there was a concern that some of the stuff that was cut down, instead of being left there to become part of the ecosystem like we had planned and like had been said, was instead going to be pulled out, at least according to one version, and the other version didn't agree. So this is a way to make sure that one hand knows what the other hand is doing, and we want to make sure that that CNS in the future, I think, will pay attention to these concerns.
Thank you for explaining it. I'm sure that people watching our meeting have no idea what this was about, so thank you.
Well, I'm going to support this, but I wouldn't have without the additional explanation, and I think the public probably would have wondered, so cool.
On that note, I think we're ready to vote. All in favor of revised resolution aye, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. And on to Jay.
Okay, I'd like to move resolution number J, award of bid, runway, safety area improvements, and obstruction clearance project, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport.
And second, Carol Chalk. Is there discussion? Tyke.
Just like the low bidder was Sealand Contractors of Rush, New York, with a bid of $3,197,872. There was four bidders, I believe, and that was low bid. And it was, I think it was, if I remember, it was a fair amount lower than what they had anticipated, which is good because it freed up some money to do other things. So,
any further questions? Ready to vote on Resolution J. All in favor? Award of bid. And are there any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous.
Excuse me.
Yes, Kathy.
Would it be all right if I just mention one F&I thing real quick?
Certainly.
Did anybody else get the email from Cheryl Nelson about the sustainability press release that Governor Patterson released on April 26th? Just briefly, the reason I want to say so is because we've had a sustainability team for some time and a really good collaboration. Some of it resulted in the Environmentally Preferable Purchasing Consortium that's gone over to 100% post-consumer content paper and a million other things. And this press release from Governor Patterson says, among other things, that he's going to have an interagency committee on sustainability and green procurement, sustainability and environmental stewardship programs, and training for staff. I think it's a great idea that it's happening in New York State. It's to wrap up Earth Week, and I think that there's a way that we can be proud of our efforts. We can also learn from this, and I just wanted to say that Tompkins County, I think, is in the vanguard on this. And also that maybe we should find a way to let the state know what we've been doing for a number of reasons. So I'm hoping that facilities will... I'll make sure that members of the facility committee that might not have seen this get a copy of it.
Thank you, Kathy. Moving on to Human Resources Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
excuse me. There's no report. We are meeting the first week in June on Thursday. I just wanted to make one small comment. We had a meeting of the negotiating team for the road patrol and with our labor negotiator, and we made what I would term a final offer to the other side, and we're waiting to hear where we're going with that. And potentially, if there is no reply in a positive manner, then we would be heading on toward interest arbitration.
Thank you, Jim. On to Government Operations Committee. Michael Hattery, Chair.
Government Operations has not met since our last meeting. Our next meeting is this Friday, May 9th at 2 o'clock. I do have two resolutions. Both pertain to authorizing public hearings regarding proposed public law modifications around the Code of Ethics. First one, which I'll introduce, Resolution K, pertains to a change in the date that elected officials and key employees will file financial disclosure forms, moving it up to January 30th of this year.
So is that so moved?
I'm moving it.
You'll just dispense with the title. Anybody want a second? Julie Kiefer seconds. Is there a comment? Frank Proto?
Yeah, I bored you all a couple of months ago with my reasons for not supporting this. I realize this is just the public hearing, but I'm going to challenge you to read the minutes of the meeting that we had the discussion so you don't have to listen to me again. I won't support the public hearing, and when this, if it survives and it comes up for a vote as a resolution, I probably will not be supporting that, principally because of the date and the timing.
Kath Lucerera.
Me neither.
Any further comment? Any further comment on Resolution K? Are we ready to vote? It's authorizing a public hearing. All in favor, raise your hands and keep them up. Thank you. Opposed? That failed. 6 in favor, 9 opposed. Did you get the votes? Thank you. And on to L.
Move Resolution L, which authorizes a public hearing. Again, this is for an addition to the Code of Ethics. I think a valuable addition regarding the addition. I'm going to do this now rather than later. Addition of a provision to the Code of Ethics regarding the misuse of position, which hadn't been in there before, by municipal officers or employees.
Seconded by Dooley. Is there discussion? Kathy Lucerer.
I just want to read it because it's short. Misuse of position. No municipal officer or employee of the county shall use or attempt to use his or her official position to advance his or her private interest or the interest of others to obtain any unwarranted privileges, exemptions, or advantages for the officer, employee, or others. I think it's pretty clear.
And this is setting a public hearing. Frank Proto, then Carol.
Mike, are there specific instances of this happening?
I'll refer to our member of the Ethics Advisory Board, which is Dooley, and there have been a number of cases which prompted them to, there have been a number of requests which prompted them to suggest a change.
I was afraid you were using me as the example.
It was that rally.
That's up to you.
I apologize. Didn't mean, I mean, I know it's been a rough night. Frank.
Whoa.
We do hear different complaints, some of which rise to the level that we actually meet about them, but there are enough concerns out there that I think this, it's reasonable to have the Code of Ethics deal with something beyond just financial disclosure.
Yes, ma'am.
Any further comment? Carol.
Oh, well, no, I just had a question as to whether, I mean, we're not allowed to do this now.
It's just not codified.
I just read the Code of Ethics. So is there no, there is a Code of Ethics now,
right.
And we aren't allowed to misuse our positions now.
The Ethics Advisory Board can't hear anything, so any cases on that subject.
Okay.
There is no language in there regarding this.
Okay. Thank you.
It's setting a public hearing. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. And on to, I think we're on to Budget and Capital Committee. Nathan Shinagawa, Chair. People want a break before we have this discussion?
No.
Yes.
I'm seeing a mixture. Some no, some yes. Who would like a break?
The old guys.
Yes. Why don't we start the discussion?
We'll proceed, and if we hit a need for a break, we'll,
thanks, Jim.
I'll have a revolt.
The old guys.
Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
All right. I'm going to just get straight to it.
Good idea.
All right. I'm going to move Resolution P. And this is revised, and I'm going to have to read out a lot of stuff here. Basically, the first whereas it was changed, now it reads, whereas Tompkins County is part of its budget policy and process, which is to establish a guideline for development of the 2009 budget, and then a new whereas that says, whereas as of April 29th, 2008, the county administrator estimates that maintenance effort would require an 8.6% increase, tax levy increase, and whereas the rate of inflation is currently 3.98%, now therefore be it. And then with these resolves, I'm going to fill in the numbers here for you. Resolves on recommendation of the Budget and Capital Committee that the legislature establishes the goal of a maximum tax levy increase of 3% for 2009, resulting in a 11.2% tax rate decrease for 2009, which is about $6.09 per 1,000 tax rate, and also resulting in a projected decrease of $1,993,000 in locally controlled spending over 2009 over 2009 projections. And the rest is the same. And I shall move.
Is there a second? Jim Dennis seconds. Right. Is there a discussion?
And just want you to know that this passed unanimously out of budget, but one of our committee members signaled voting for it in order to get it to, you know, to the floor of the legislature.
I saw Dooley, then Pam, then Kathy.
This is not the important point, but as long as you have put a date in the second whereas, mm-hmm. I can give you a date for the third whereas.
Oh, okay.
The rate of inflation as of April 16th was reported to be. That's
16th,
2008, all right. Yeah. And Pam McAsee.
Yes, I'd like to propose an amendment to this resolution. Instead of a 3% increase, a 3.5% increase.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Will Burbank?
All right. And just for information purposes, a 3.5% would basically result in a 10.8% tax rate decrease and a projected decrease of $1,817,000 in locally controlled spending.
So discussion on the amendment. Pam?
Yeah. Yes, I originally supported the 3% increase, and I decided after thinking about it some more after our retreat that when we have done this in the past, when we have set a goal, and we have set it very, very low, we put our department heads through the hoops, and then we tend to end up raising it. And I think that we need to be very, very frugal in our tax increase, our levy increase this year. But I also think that the reality of what we are going to pass is more in the 3.5 range, and so I that's what made me change my mind to introduce this.
And I think I saw Kathy's hand before.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be supporting 3%, not because that's my ideal number. As a matter of fact, I think if we set it at 3, we're going to end up at 4 or higher. That's one of the reasons I wouldn't set it at 3.5. I heard what David said, and I know that some people will use that as a justification to say that we should raise the tax levy increase even higher. I think that this is precisely the time when we should be more cognizant of the pressures that our taxpaying public face, and that we should be even more stringent. And if it was up to me and I thought I could get more of a majority vote, I'd try to go below 3%. The pressures that people are under with this rate of inflation and the fact that we're in a recession are just, well, I think unimaginable for some of us, and I might include myself in that. I don't have kids to support or anything like that. 3.5, I think, is an invitation. It's more than, as one of our colleagues used to say, a camel nose under the tent. So I'd urge everybody to not support this amendment. I think that department heads do a really good job in really tough times, and that they, many of them, most of them, all of them, are county taxpayers too, and that they may understand the quandary that we're in, and they're part of the team and will help us out at this time. So I urge my colleagues not to support this amendment because it's just opening the door to raise it even higher.
Jim Dennis?
I'm supporting the three, and I'm not going to argue strongly against Pam, but I think what we have to recognize is, and I would like people that send us here to recognize that that the legislature is clearly listening to what's going on. New York State, before David said it tonight, all one has to do is look at newspapers and listen to the news and read magazines, and New York State's in tough shape. And I think the three might look good 6 months from now. So, I mean, I'm not going to support Pam's addition because I think we have some long, hard looks at the budget over the next 6 months, and I think three is good.
Thank you. Martha, then Mike Sigler.
I would be all right with four. It sounds like a radical idea. I remind people that's like less than half what maintenance of effort would be, 8.6% maintenance of effort, and that's even before David's cheery news. We have people dependent upon the good services of Tompkins County, and I think that's what hits us in the face every November when we increase the rate, here and there. And I think Pam hit it right on the head that if we all sit here and say, well, we'll probably go up to 3.5 anyway, then let's really mean it at 3.5, and then our department heads can know, okay, that's what it is, and that's still going to be extremely tough. And I have to say that the postcards and the emails and things I've gotten about the WIC program for the sake of saving a couple of jobs if we're going to hit a 3.5% target, this is serious cutting like we haven't seen before. This is nothing around the edges, and I think we're going to hear from our citizens that, you know, we've heard this in the past, that it really matters what county government does, and I think that 3.5 is justifiable. It's going to be very difficult, and I understand that everybody's budget is in really tough shape these days, but I wish I had time to start another pushback organization. I mean, I think what the school districts have gotten came from the county taxpayer. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's fine because maybe education should be getting more off the income taxes instead of the property tax. But it seems the state has failed in its responsibility to take responsibility. So in the end, I think 3.5% is really very low, and I would urge you all to vote for it.
Mike Sigler, then Tyke, then Kathy, then Greg.
I mean, I'll be quick. I mean, I just I look back to last year, and you know, we set 2%. At least, you know, some people voted against that, if I remember correctly. But and people said, "Oh, it can't be done. Can't hit it. No way can we get to 2%." And not only did we get to 2%, I mean, granted, at the very end of the day, we got it up higher than that, but still under 3%. And we still didn't, I felt at the end, we didn't cut any programs. We didn't do any program evaluation. We trimmed around the edges, which, again, people said, oh, we can't trim around the edges this year. We really have to look at every program. I don't know. At the end of the day, we trimmed. And my feeling is that if we truly are going to head into a recession, New York will be the last one in it, and we'll be the last one to leave it. I think recessions last longer for New York State than other states. I look like the 1990s. We were in, definitely a downturn while the rest of the country was in an upturn. So I feel that we need to prepare for that. And that's why I think that a 3% goal is is not only adequate, it's desirable. So my other question is more of a clarification. From the way this reads, we're saying that the locally controlled spending is actually going down. I mean, I know how you can look at it that way, but the tax levy is still going up, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And not just the total tax levy, the locally controlled tax levy is going up.
Yes.
So I think when we phrase it like it's a decrease, well, it's not a decrease. And I mean, most people are going to look at that and say, well, they're saying they're decreasing it and they're not. So I don't know if we should not put that in or rephrase that or how you'd want to handle that. But I think in real dollars is how people look at it. And I don't see this as a decrease in locally controlled spending. So.
Thank you, Mike. Have Tyke?
Yeah, you know, every time we go through this process right now, I feel like we're in the middle of a poker game and we're calling, you know, yeah. I'll call your three and raise you five. It bothers me. You know, we're absolutely bleeding out there. I don't know how people are making as it is. Can we hold it lower than that? I would hope so. And I think that's the implication when we were elected that we, you know, I think this setting a target is a bit fruitless in some ways because I think, at least in Groton, they expect, you know, we're going to do our best to keep it at a minimum, period. And whether we set a goal or not, I think that's what we're here to do. So I won't support it.
Talking about the amendment, have Kathy?
Or either one, so.
Kathy, Greg,
thank
Frank,
you, Mr. Chair.
And then myself.
I just wanted to address the, beginning of the floor discussion on WIC. This program serves the families, women with infants and children in the communities. These are people that most need our help, and right now they're being served by professionals. I think that making a comparison between that and raising the tax levy is an interesting way to look at it. I think the letters and postcards that we're getting are more from people that are concerned about the quality of this program that serves those that could be said to be most in need in this community. I didn't know we were going to start this discussion, but I couldn't let that shot over the bow go unanswered. I really would like to disconnect those two things. I know that there's a connection between paying salaried staff in Tompkins County and between outsourcing it to nonprofit organizations that don't pay as good benefits. But I think that we need to be cognizant that when we start that discussion, when we're talking about a program like WIC, we're talking about changing the quality of services and possibly changing the number of sites that are set up, the reimbursement. It's a huge, complex decision, and I think I just wanted to call that because I don't think we should have started the discussion in the budget discussion because I think it's too complex to have brought it up, but I will take it on if that's part of it, because I think we can achieve a 3% tax levy increase or less, and I'm certainly in favor of less, and I think we can do less. The reason I've said to go for 3 is because I think we can get majority votes on it, and I'm in favor of setting goals. I think that when the legislature, we've demonstrated this in the past, and it was one of the things that the CAP committee suggested, that if we set goals, we're more likely to be able to move toward it as a body. And so that's why I supported the 3%. If we came up with 2.5%, believe me, you've seen me at 0 before. I agree with what was said about what it's really like out there for folks, and I urge people to keep it down.
Craig Stevenson.
I wasn't going to speak to the amendment, but the more I got thinking about it, I don't support 3 or 3.5, so I guess I can speak at any time. I think that, you know, I represent a constituency. I mean, I hear what Martha was saying about cutting programs, but I represent a constituency, I think, that not only isn't afraid that we might cut programs, they want us to cut some programs. I think, you know, that we ought to start at a fairly low number, and if there are efforts or programs that stand the test of the budget process and we hear from constituents that either don't want something cut or want something added, then that'll happen through the process. But I think that both of these numbers are starting too high, and I won't support this resolution.
Frank Proto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't support the 3.5. I would consider supporting the 3. And Carol is was very interested in my comments at the retreat that we tend to get into duking it out over what amounts to pennies sometimes, and the people who are most affected are the people that need the services the most. I'm glad Tim Ashmore is here, because I want to go to an article that was in the journal here over the last couple of days, and I believe the headline read, Governor Patterson says upstate is in a recession. The numbers I recollect say that if you think 2008 and 9 are tough, wait till 2010 and 11. The concern is that the state has collected less and will continue to collect less in income taxes because Wall Street's in the toilet, if I can be that blunt. The number of people who've been contributing through their income taxes, through profits and salaries and whatnot, that had gone on for several years, are not earning the salaries that they have been. The capital gains rate is suffering, and people, when they sell property, are paying higher amounts. The tax rate, obviously, is not acceptable, either at the state level or at our level. And my concern right now is prioritizing our programs. Even though, as we've heard a little bit earlier tonight, that people are concerned about the WIC program. They've singled that out. I don't think anybody's made that a target, but I think the discussion has sort of gone that way. At least it's on the table. I only hope that every single program that we're going to get into when we get our infamous budget books will receive the same amount of scrutiny and hopefully the same amount of comment from individuals who receive services from those programs as the WIC program has. I know that we've been talking about that a lot. I've received not just one. I've probably received 20 letters from individuals. Some of it is incorrect, but the general tenor is that they're concerned about the program and the program delivery. I want to make sure that when we get into the budget discussions, and you sad to say, I mean, you've heard me sing this song before, I'm a strong proponent of the actual standing committees reviewing the budgets in their own committees, and I know that some feel that we end up with five cheerleaders, depending upon how many people are on the committee, for certain programs. But you know something? That's okay. That's what we're here for. We are not a board of directors. We are elected individuals who have to represent constituencies. And there are some people in our own constituencies that are more affected by some of these programs than others. And it's okay to be sensitive. But I think we also have to be sensible about what we're going to trim. I think that in some cases we haven't been tough enough on prioritizing some of these programs. And I'll throw out, I'll join Kathy in throwing a, or shooting a shot across your bow. I'm concerned about the alternatives to incarceration programs and the costs that they have incurred. We have yet to see the results on paper of some of the things that some of us went along with to approve. Now, some have said, and they probably will say, well, gee whiz, you know, we've received all kind of data. Well, we haven't received anything recently. And I really think we need to review some of these programs and prioritize them. And perhaps we have to tighten our belts and compromise, even if they affect our own districts. But I'm just, David sort of set me up tonight with the comments that he made. If you think next year is going to be tough, wait till the year after, because it's no picnic out there. And the state is going to dump more on us. Hate to say that, but in my opinion, this is just the tip of the iceberg, what we're seeing for the current fiscal year.
I want to weigh in, and then I'll have Carol, Martha, and Dooley. Just want to emphasize that the Community Advisory Panel 3 years ago recommended this practice of setting a guideline early to allow the organization and the community to have a dialogue. Okay. in a very relaxed, methodical manner about what the impact of what potential cuts could be, as opposed to hitting September and having less information that might be useful to understand the impact of potential cuts. So I think we're telegraphing a message to the community. We're telegraphing a message internally to our organization to assist us in hitting this guideline or this goal. And we're also a model for other municipalities. There are many municipalities who do not do this, and then they get to that last month or so in their budget process and don't necessarily come out at a rate that I believe is sustainable for this community. So this is why I'm not going to be supporting the amendment. Carol Chalk, then Martha.
Yeah, I think that the services that counties provide were the very first things that citizens of this country banded together to say we need together. Counties were the first entities that were created, and it was to provide services. And so I think that the kinds of services we're talking about are the core things that people need in their lives. Highways, public safety, services that support the neediest, libraries, things like that, that we've all agreed as a community and have for since the founding of our country that people need. And I think that when we're looking at just a survival rate for current programs of 8.6%, half of that would be 4.3%. And a rate of inflation at currently 3.98%. Add to that the changes that we're going to see in the cost of petroleum, which is essential to doing that most basic of things of, you know, maintaining our highways. That was the very first of the things that people banded together to build. I'm just not sure that it's realistic. Although I'd like to be able to go out and say, yes, we can maintain these cuts, I'm not sure that it's realistic to say that we can, that we'll be able to maintain a rate that far below just the rate of inflation. So, again, in the interest of not putting our department heads through something that I think is unrealistic, you know, I would support the 3.5 in recognizing that we're still going to have to make very, very serious cuts.
Martha, then Dooley, I'd like to get to a vote.
I would like to make a couple of comments and ask David a question. We're not going to get to this 3, even the 3.5%, without cutting big programs. And all of the alternatives to incarceration programs are not big enough to get us there. Let me point out to emphasize what Carol, reinforce what Carol said. This is the budget packet from last week. Page 20, 19 and 20 shows our locally controlled discretionary spending. That's